Welcome. Today I'll be interviewing Mr. Octavius Pinkard. He is a PhD researcher at the University of Kent. His work focuses on the development and projection of identities and interests among Lebanese diaspora communities in Senegal, the United States, and the European Union. Mr. Pinkard has served as an editor of the Working Paper series on diasporas and security. In addition, he has extensive experience that includes NATO headquarters in Brussels, the National Security Education Program in Washington, and he has experience teaching comparative politics along with international relations at the College of William and Mary in Williamsburg, Virginia. Welcome, Octavius Pinkard. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'd like to begin by mentioning the fact that you served as a consultant for civil-military relations at the Joint Forces Staff College in Norfolk, Virginia. As an active analyst and consultant for organizations in Pakistan, Belgium, Lebanon, Jordan, and the United States, what are some of the challenges associated with civil-military relations today? In addition, how does this compare to the civil-military relations experienced 10 years ago?
Thank you very much, Magdalena, for having me. That's a very good question. I would say that militaries are instruments of state foreign policy, and humanitarian organizations, these NGOs, are not. And so I think that one of the major challenges has been to build trust between those two sets of organizations, not just in terms of the long-term and short-term interests of the organizations, but also in terms of the appropriate role that each organization can play in terms of disaster response, complex emergencies, or even peace operations. Those tensions do exist in terms of lack of trust, lack of understanding of the roles that they can play. But I think what we see is that what these organizations can do is actually quite complementary, because militaries can provide the stable and more secure environments in which humanitarian organizations can then more effectively provide their assistance. So militaries can protect borders, rebuild bridges and roads, or even transport humanitarian aid as a way of assisting or complementing the work of humanitarian organizations. I think in the last 10 years, we've seen not only an increase in the number of crises to which militaries and humanitarian organizations have to respond, but also in the severity of these crises. And I think that in the midst of dwindling budgets, both for the civilian organizations and for the militaries, this can adversely affect relations between these organizations. The expectations might be that civilian organizations aren't doing enough, or that the military organizations aren't doing enough. But in reality, it could be simply a result of or a function of a lack of resources that were possessed even 5-10 years ago. Also, I think with the advent of and the increased reliance on social media, we see things much more quickly, much more instantaneously than before. And so this heightens expectations for faster responses or for better responses. And so if response isn't fast enough or it isn't seen as being as comprehensive enough, you know, there can be blame shifted from one
person to another,
to another. And so this can complicate relations between civilian and military organizations.
You also served as the editor of a working paper series on diasporas and security for the university's Conflict Analysis Research Center. Please discuss the significance of the working paper series.
Oh, yes. This was a two-year program that the university ran, managed by the Conflict Analysis Research Center. And instead of bringing together only scholars of diaspora studies or of conflict and security, the program sought to bring together those scholars plus policymakers, plus members of the NGO community who have been seeking to bridge the gap between people and official institutions. I think that in some cases, when we look at, say, any issues related to diasporas and the relationship to countries of settlement or governments in the countries of settlement, we tend to have a one-dimensional approach. We look at only the perspective of the diaspora communities, or only the perspectives of the host governments, or perhaps even only the perspectives of the NGOs that are working in that area. And so what we sought to do was to bring them all together so that they could discuss, debate, make recommendations to each other about the most appropriate approaches and policy responses to the challenges brought about by diaspora communities within Europe, but also the opportunities that diaspora communities presented to host governments for better understanding social, political, security-related dynamics in those home regions and in those home countries.
With extensive experience that includes work done at NATO headquarters in Brussels, the National Security Education Program in Washington, and teaching experience in comparative politics and international relations at the College of William and Mary in Williamsburg, Virginia, what is the best advice you would be able to provide to the youth interested in pursuing a career similar to the one that you have currently pursued?
Okay. I think that in terms of advice in this context, I would say that it's really important to develop a well-rounded, a well-informed perspective about the world beyond your borders. So I would encourage students to read online newspaper resources from different regions of the world, and not to just engage in what we might call crisis education. You know, we only become interested in this region or that country when there's a crisis taking place there. Study these regions, become more aware of socio-political dynamics in those regions beforehand, and then you'll understand why things happen at a later juncture. I would also encourage students to pursue internships. Those are invaluable in terms of complementing what you're studying in IR. Further to that, I would think that volunteering for humanitarian organizations provides a really good perspective on the challenges faced by NGOs and on the dynamics that exist between NGOs and governments, not just national governments, but even IGOs, in trying to effectively address these major challenges that exist in various regions of the world. I would also encourage students to travel as broadly as possible. I know that resources can be limited, but travel, I think, is key here, because you can read about things. And this is in some ways a criticism of some scholars of IR. Much of their work is theoretical, but it's not really informed by any empirics. They haven't been to the region, they don't speak the languages, these kinds of things. And so I think that young people should certainly try to travel as much as possible and build relationships abroad.
And I think that's certainly crucial in terms of building that understanding of a culture or society, or even obtaining more information about the way that a certain country is you have to travel, you have to see a place in order to be able to understand it better. After conducting some research on you, I noticed that you were awarded a visiting research appointment in the Center for African Studies at the University of California, Berkeley. What do you hope to teach today's youth about the impact of African studies?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to my affiliation with Berkeley and to the Center for African Studies, which I will begin after I leave here,
yes.
In Toronto. And I think, you know, my work there will focus on the Lebanese Shia communities in Senegal. And I think that my approach to my research there and the talks that I'll give there is quite consistent with the advice I would give to anyone who's interested in sort of African studies. And that would be to ensure that you don't focus exclusively on the predominant narrative that tends to characterize our conceptions of Africa, our perceptions of the enduring realities on the continent. So it's not just about ethnic conflict. Africa is not just about chronic development. There's a great deal of variation across the continent, particularly regionally. And I would encourage students to focus on a particular region, for instance, and then build on that by engaging in a comparative analysis, a comparative study of this subregion versus this subregion within Africa. Also, I would say that, you know, studying the various dynamics at play within Africa requires employing a host of different disciplines, because you can't understand Africa simply by studying international relations. You have to incorporate economics, anthropology, languages, international relations, of course, sociology. All of these will help you to develop a much more informed perspective on geopolitical realities there. So that's what I would encourage students to do.